The air around the second planet of the Frogstar system was stale and unwholesome. The dank winds that swept continually over its surface swept over salt flats, dried up marshland, tangled and rotting vegetation, and the crumbling remains of ruined cities. No life moved across its surface. The ground, like that of many planets in this part of the galaxy, had long been deserted. The howl of the wind was desolate enough as it gusted through the old decaying houses of the cities. It was more desolate as it whipped about the bottoms of the tall black towers that swayed uneasily here and there about the surface of this world. At the top of these towers lived colonies of large, scraggy, evil-smelling birds, the sole survivors of the civilization that once lived here. The howl of the wind was at its most desolate, however, when it passed over a pimple of a place set in the middle of a wide grey plain on the outskirts of the largest of the abandoned cities. This pimple of a place was the thing that had earned this world the reputation of being the most totally evil place in the galaxy. From without, it was simply a steel dome about 30 feet across. From within, it was something more monstrous than the mind can comprehend. About 100 yards or so away, and separated from it by a pockmarked and blasted stretch of the most barren land imaginable, was what would probably have to be described as a landing pad of sorts. That is to say that scattered over a largish area were the ungainly hulks of two or three dozen crash-landed buildings. Flitting over and around these buildings was a mind that was waiting for something. The mind directed its attention into the air, and before very long a distant speck appeared, surrounded by a ring of smaller specks. The larger speck was the left-hand tower of the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy office building, descending through the stratosphere of Frogstar World B. As it descended, Rooster suddenly broke the long, uncomfortable silence that had grown up between the two men. He stood up and gathered his towel into a bag. He said, "Beeblebrox, I will now do the job I was sent here to do." Zaphod looked up at him from where he was sitting in a corner sharing unspoken thoughts with Marvin. "Yeah?" he said. "The building will shortly be landing. When you leave the building, do not go out of the door," said Rooster. "Go out of the window." "Good luck," he added, and walked out of the door, disappearing from Zaphod's life as mysteriously as he had entered it. Zaphod leapt up and tried the door, but Rooster had already locked it. He shrugged and returned to the corner. 2 minutes later, the building crash-landed amongst the other wreckage. Its escort of Frogstar fighters deactivated their force beams and soared off into the air again, bound for Frogstar World A, an altogether more congenial spot. They never landed on Frogstar World B. No one did. No one ever walked on its surface other than the intended victims of the total perspective vortex. Zaphod was badly shaken by the crash. He lay for a while in the silent, dusty rubble to which most of the room had been reduced. He felt that he was at the lowest ebb he had ever reached in his life. He felt bewildered. He felt lonely. He felt unloved. Eventually, he felt he ought to get whatever it was over with. He looked around the cracked and broken room. The wall had split round the door frame, and the door hung open. The window, by some miracle, was closed and unbroken. For a while he hesitated. Then he thought that if his strange and recent companion had been through all that he had been through just to tell him what he had told him, then there must be a good reason for it. With Marvin's help, he got the window open. Outside it, the cloud of dust aroused by the crash and the hulks of the other buildings with which this one was surrounded effectively prevented Zaphod from seeing anything of the world outside. Not that this concerned him unduly. His main concern was what he saw when he looked down. Zarniwoop's office was on the 15th floor. The building had landed at a tilt of about 45 degrees, but still the descent looked heart-stopping. Eventually, stung by the continuous series of contemptuous looks that Marvin appeared to be giving him, he took a deep breath and clambered out onto the steeply inclined side of the building. Marvin followed him, and together they began to crawl slowly and painfully down the 15 floors that separated them from the ground. As he crawled, the dank air and dust choked his lungs, his eyes smarted, and the terrifying distance down made his heads spin. The occasional remark from Marvin of the order of, This is the sort of thing you life forms enjoy, is it? I ask merely for information. Did little to improve his state of mind.